Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I mean, it's been a month since, what is it now? It's November the 8th. It's been over a month since the Hamas attacks. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you start to think about moving on. I mean,
well, it's not really moving on. It's more...
Nothing on the front page of the Times today. Literally, five things on the front of the paper today. Gulp, British women are the world's biggest binge drinkers. Good morning, Esther. above that, my liaison with Barbara, what Streisand told me, cool jeans, how to wear your pair, be bold on tax, Tories urge Hunt, and police resist calls to ban march. Nothing about Gaza. I mean, technically,
well,
the march
is technically...
But yeah, they moved on, you flip through the paper, and there's Princess Diana and Harry and... You know, ads for Selfridges or
Captain Tom,
you know. I'm just saying, it's not... We had this situation where I was wrestling with the fact that the Middle East is unavoidable. Now I'm thinking I could write about something else, but I'm having a weird... The only thing is, there's no... How does one put this? Column writing is... I've done some decent columns on this.
Are you feeling like that journalist in The Quiet American?
Oh, no. Go on, explain.
So The Quiet American, isn't the whole thing about The Quiet American is that one of the storylines in it is that there is this the foreign correspondent, an American foreign correspondent who's stationed in Vietnam, and Vietnam is very quiet, nothing really happens there, and then suddenly the Vietnam War breaks out, and he suddenly has this kind of purpose and a renaissance because he's this kind of... It's a little bit like Julie Bindel and the and trans issues. You know, Julie Bindel was kind of... just pottering along, sort of minding her own business, and then the trans stuff came along and she's had this massive career renaissance.
Yes, I suppose, yeah. So what I'm going to say is that I got my pieces have been widely read, they've been put on the front page, I've got 2,000 comments on each one, people talk about them on Twitter in a nice way. I've found myself, you know, this whole podcast has been about what's the topic, do I do this, do I do that, how do I make that funny, all my worries about, am I funny enough? How can I make this a joke? They've got people being serious all around me. How much of it? And then this, I've written about important things, and I've really enjoyed it. So it's like, should I turn my back on this and write about wither Bart Simpson now that Homer isn't strangling him anymore?
It's very,
you know?
Sad circumstances in which you find yourself to be to have a... Well, not in a renaissance because you never went anywhere, but it's a sad situation to find yourself popular in. But
yes.
rather than yay, the war has been good to me. I think it's more like I have this purpose and I have people who I need to speak to who want to hear what I've got to say. And as a writer, there really is nothing better than that. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. You're just trying to communicate with people.
And it's like when cricket comes along and I already know my cricket. The thing about, for any Jewish writer, we've tended to, and indeed any Arab writer, I guess, we have tended, certainly Jews, though, to have thought about Israel a bit more, to have read it all along, to remember the various events in the past. And when this leaps up, unlike having to quick hastily be an expert, like we journalists have to be, it's something I've got a bit of background, a bit of hinterland. I have something a bit more to say. I noticed, Hugo wrote a really good piece a couple of days ago, Hugo Rifkind. They put his one on the front page. He got 2,000 comments. I was a bit jealous. Wait a minute, what about... And I don't have a column on like a Monday or whenever it was. But you also... The Times isn't short of good Jewish writers with something to say. So anyway, I thought maybe one would...
So you're thinking...
I also wanted to... Sorry. Yeah, you know, look, because last week we talked about moving to New Zealand. I just want to say as a parenthesis, we were talking about moving to New Zealand. And that column did very well. And I just want to give a shout out to a listener called Paul LeConte. Caffeinated, hypermediated, leftist designer, photographer, sad devotion to typefaces, Everton and UK indie music. I love it when I have someone with actual leftist in their bio says they like me, because, you know, that's great. Tweeting from Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the best podcast by At Giles Corran today from a few days ago that I'm going to talk about in the morning when I'm not so bloody knackered. Damn you two are good people, he says. Brackets, just quietly for Esther. Nelson in New Zealand has same sunshine hours as Monaco and Shards.
I told you.
Don't know what Shards is.
Nelson, I'm writing it down. Nelson.
Nelson, New Zealand has the sunshine. He says, and then he's tweeted again, New Zealand klaxon. I've always maintained that no one swears quite as eloquently as the British. Had me giggling on the 5-hour drive home tonight, but so pointed about the Middle East. And he's awake now. I think he's just getting up or something. But I want to say shout out to Paul. Sorry we were a bit mean about New Zealand.
I wasn't.
No, you weren't.
I'll be knocking on your door.
Esther's coming to...
I'm coming. I'm coming for you. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm being heard in New Zealand writing about the Middle East.
New Zealanders like us. Kiwis like us. Kia ora, New Zealand. Here we come.
What does that mean?
Kia ora means hi. Good morning.
Is it orange drink?
No, that's kia ora.
What did you say?
Kia ora.
Kia. Yeah, K-I-A-O-R-A. Kia ora. That's the orange drink.
No, kia ora. No. The orange
I'll
drink.
Be your dog.
Yes, the orange drink... culturally appropriated the word for hello, good morning, greetings.
Fuck off. In,
I will not. And it's spelled K-I A. Dash... No, it's not. It hasn't got an A in it.
K-I-A dash O-R-A.
Okay, just check.
Kiora. And you think it's...
I'll be your dog.
And it's got nothing to do with New Zealand?
I don't think so.
Kiora is a Maori language greeting which has entered New Zealand English. It translated literally as have life. Kiora orange drink, though.
I think it was...
Advert... And it's very cute, but if you look at the kid...
Oh, yes.
The kid's not from New Zealand. The kid is culturally appropriated from...
somewhere
Central
else.
Africa.
Yeah.
Wearing... great ad.
That is a... The advert is a hideous mashup of... cultural stereotypes, things pinched from all over the place. Anyway, kia ora
to all our New Zealand friends.
Hi in New Zealand.
So, what should we talk about then? I had my thought about being Jewish as a ripoff, which...
yes, I did really like being Jewish. Well, being a secular Jew is a ripoff. Why don't you expand on what you meant?
I was, because everyone's talking about the Jewish community are upset, and they were talking on Times Radio, they were saying... you know, these marches, I don't have a strong feeling. The marches, the rallies, there's lots of good people on them. There's some middling people on them. There's probably some Hamas-supporting anti-Semites on them. Tommy Robinson is apparently going along to defend the cenotaph. But the idea that he should be a friend of the Jews, I don't know. He's literally Tommy Robinson. Is it the EDL, is he? The English Defence League?
So, yeah.
He's just been allowed back on Twitter. The first thing he's tweeted, oh, I'm going down the cenotaph to kill some AIDS. And so whether or not... but anyway...
In the same way that... a lot of women on the left who found themselves gender critical have been sort of forced into the arms of the right. I think British Jews do have to be a bit wary of,
the idea that
aligning themselves with people who will seek to defend Jews just because they don't like Muslims is quite... that's... you've got to be a bit careful.
Or to be flattered that Tommy likes us a bit more than he likes...
That is the slightly queasy compromise that we've seen with feminists on the left, and also it bubbles up in this issue as well. The enemy of my enemy
we'll
is my
all
friend.
The friends we can get, frankly. They were saying things that there's going to be these rallies on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, not necessarily Armistice Day, will it be at the cenotaph, blah, blah, blah. And they're quite threatening, and Jews are afraid to go into town with a rally like that. And I'm going to think, I'm a Jew, I'm afraid to go into town, whatever they're rallying about. I find rallies in themselves frightening. Mm. But they talk about the threats to the Jewish community, and the Jews are feeling this, and Jews are feeling that. And you have this vision of these Jews all sitting around together going, oh, I don't like the look of this. Mm. But unfortunately, I don't have that.
You have spoken for a few years now about feeling a bit deracinated, is the way that you describe it, because you
from the Latin radex radici, meaning root, and deracinate, you take pluck by the roots.
So your parents decided basically to not be Jewish. You didn't have a bar mitzvah. You're a secular Jew. I did not convert to marry you. We got married in a church. We celebrate Christmas. We do not celebrate any of the high or holy days. We don't go to synagogue. We're not Jewish. And on the one hand, that's much more straightforward. But on the other hand, it does make you feel a little sad sometimes.
It's just a bit of a rip-off, because I can't pray. I can't Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu, end of everything. And that's it. That's my five words. I can go, and you mutter, and I can't read anything. So So my Jewishness at a time like this sets me apart. It's not as grisly as it felt a couple of weeks ago, but it sets me apart. It requires me to take a position on the Middle East, which I don't really have a dog in the fight. People go, oh, there must be friends who've been kidnapped. I'm like, I've never met anyone who's even been to Israel. I don't know. And so there's all that kind of thing. And I didn't mind being drawn into the fight, or the verbal fight, because it gave me some sort of identity. I was quite proud to say, look, here I am, part of this Jewish community. But outside of that, you know, I've written this intermittent column in the Jewish Chronicle about trying to cook my way back into the faith, because I can cook a cholent and a gefilte fish and a chicken soup, and I have that, and I maybe give my children some of that. But I'm the end of the line. It's a rip-off. It's depressing. I'm not passing on anything of it to my children. We do not have a Friday night dinner. You do not have that slightly cosy, embattled Jewish thing. We've had it round at my uncle and aunt's, that feeling when my uncle Andrew will do the prayers over the bread and everything, and I'll wear a yarmulke for a minute, and we'll anything, and then I have to leave. Or if I go to a bar mitzvah, I'm going to a bar mitzvah next weekend. I'm available only for the party, not for the bit in the shul. Mostly, but I'm taking Sam to some football, but also I feel so alienated in a shul, and this is a big one up in Elstree or Borehamwood or somewhere, because I go there and there's 400 people in there, women sitting separately, lots of people I know and recognise. Time to break. They hand me a book, and I know I have to open it from the back, but I don't know what page, because it's all funny letters. So people have to sort of reach over my shoulder and tut and point to the riffle of the pages as they turn to where we're meant to be. I was wearing my yarmulke last time I went to a bar mitzvah, and one of the kind of the shul marshals, the guys who make sure everything, came and handed me a prayer shawl. Put this on. I'm whispering because it's all going on. I don't want to put it on. I don't know how to. Just put it on. People feel uncomfortable. Fuck off. I've come to this fucking shul to show support for my cousin because I'm part of her. I'm not telling me I'm making people feel uncomfortable. And I'm wearing this fucking hat, which I feel is going to fall off all the time. It's not funny. It's terrible.
And go to shul and create a stink.
No, but I didn't mean to. I was trying to sit at the back.
No,
and
you
just,
never mean
I've
to,
I've gone representing
you?
My dead father who could do all of this stuff. When my father... Anyway, so he hands me the prayer shawl, which is a big like silk thing with a blue trim. Yeah, and he hands it to me. Now, I remember my father putting on his, and he would kiss the four corners of it. There's nothing more Jewish than a bald man kissing the four corners of a piece of fabric. And then fold it in some special way, put it over his shoulders. I just flung it over myself like I'd had a shower. And everyone's looking at me, and I'm wearing a prayer shawl, and there's a sort of thing. I kept thinking of the cloak of invisibility in, is that the Harry Potter thing?
Yeah.
And it's like, I put it on, I'm wearing a suit, and I put this thing on, and I look like such a twat.
Jew?
No, I don't look like a Jew. That's the thing. They all look like Jews. They're all slightly hunched with their big noses, and they're properly... I'm kidding. I've got a big nose too. But they're... No, that's the whole point. I look all wrong. The Jews will wear their yarmulke, or their kippot, as they'll call it. Like, you can't put it on the top of your head, because you look...
Well, that's... No, but the super square nerdy Jews wear it, like, right at the top. And then if you're more rakish, you wear it
So I want to wear it to the back, but it slides off, so you then need a hairpin.
Yeah.
I don't think hairpins are very manly. So I just feel very uncomfortable in a shul. And yet out of the shul, people are offering sympathy for their thing. And I'm just saying, I'm getting ripped off. If I could go to the shul and say... And just to characterise Yiddish in a... the only language I'm allowed to make fun of in that way. I could go and say Baruch Adonai,
that's it.
And then And then they say, it's like, it's the same thing in a church. I don't want to take communion in case I get struck by lightning.
No, but neither do I, and I'm an Anglican.
Yeah, but they don't make you wear some weird thing. And so I then put it on, and I said, I don't know how to put it on. Just put it on anyway, you're making people feel uncomfortable. I'm in this room full of Jews, they're off. Making me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're ticking you off. Yeah.
Yes, I know. But that's the... I felt Palestinian. I felt completely surrounded by these Jews who thought I shouldn't really be here doing the wrong thing.
Right. But that is one of the things, that is one of the central things about Judaism, and it's why there aren't very many Jews in this country. I think there are only 200,000 Jews in this country who say, you know, I am Jewish on a form. It's because Jews are not interested in converts.
No.
They're really not.
But they want to include me in their thing. So they love me being a Jew because there aren't that many famous Jews or whatever in the public eye Jews.
Yeah, it's just you and Maureen.
So I put this thing on and I'm sitting there and everyone's kind of looking at me and giggling at me like the children, the little Jewish kids. Oh, he doesn't know how to put on his thing. I had to wear this borrowed thing and I thought God can sort of see me from up there. The God in whom I do not believe is looking down at Borehamwood Synagogue, seeing them all doing the right thing. And this one idiot wearing his thing like inside out, back to front. I felt such a fool. Mm. And this is about this ripoff. I've got nowhere. The Jews think I'm useless. Everybody else thinks I'm a Jew. I don't get to be part of a Jewish community. Nobody wants me in Israel. I don't have relatives I can go and visit.
When I talk about Jews not wanting converts, they don't want converts. They want Jews to kind of be more Jewish, but they don't want like me to be Jewish.
I always think I will. I've always thought I'll learn some Hebrew and just like get a bit Jewish, and then I go to shul and feel alienated and don't like it.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, you, when you were, because you know, your formative years, you were at Westminster, and your relationship was with Evensong and Matey, who you kept in touch with for years.
Willie Booth,
the chaplain, exactly. Oh, that's your kind of religious and cultural formative experience, and that's really important. That's really important and not to be sniffed at. And
I stood there at 9 o'clock at night in the dark, alone, in front of the chaplain in Westminster Abbey, and said, "I believe in the Holy Catholic Church, the communion of saints, the forgiveness of sins, the devil who walketh about as a roaring lion, whom resist steadfast in the faith." And then he replied and everything, and that was
and
great.
That's what brought you comfort and solace and peace and security when you were a teenager. So and religion and parents and family, it's all the same thing. It's all the same, and it's not nice for you. And I think that is an interesting subject. If you feel like it's not too like there, Jewy.
Yeah. I do kind of.
I don't, but I mean, it'd be more interesting than me talking about being a slightly deracinated Anglican. It's slightly more interesting than that. But there is that column there for you. And I did think that, because I don't think that people really understand what life is like as a properly secular Jew in this country.
The only problem is, I thought this morning I opened the page and there was Melanie Phillips and there was Hugo Rifkin and Juliette Samuel. Oh, God, we are full of Jews.
Right. So you
want to
move on.
I wonder, like, maybe to like take my foot off the gas with that. Then again, how do I get on the front page on a Saturday? Because I love it.
You can't...
2 weeks on the trot, I'm going, yes, I'm in.
Sure, but wouldn't it be amazing to do it for something else?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You seemed quite taken with the Barbra Streisand plus Robbie Williams fame is bad thing.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about that? Because you've talked about that before. You always, and you're always very shocked and horrified by those endless interviews with male celebrities who say, "Oh, I was a rubbish dad. I wasn't there for my kids. I was a shit dad." And you always think, "What is the point of being alive if you're a shit dad?"
Yeah. Well, you know it's coming, so don't avoid it, because you can never get that time back. And that's one of the few things in my life I've done right, I think. To be there, and I don't have anything to reproach myself for with my parenting, which is a, you know, yet.
Yes. Which is an enormous... Well, yeah, exactly. It's all to play for.
Well, because, yeah.
Still plenty of time to make a mess of them.
No, but it was the Barbara Streisand take out of this thing was, I haven't had much fun in my life.
Yeah.
And before the Robbie Williams story came along, which is about...
It's a documentary, isn't it, on television about his kind of collapse.
And he says this thing that fame... And he said in an interview with Catelyn last week that fame is... fucks you up. Mm. And no one's come out of it. I mean, the exact quote being... it's probably not the thing I would most focus on, but here we go. So, do you think... Catelyn Moran writes that's a prerequisite for being creative. Is that why people do it? Because they have mental health problems?
Mm.
And Robbie, he stares at me. Yeah, of course. Full stop. He stares at me again. Of course. And if they don't have mental health problems at the beginning, they do by the end. Mm. No one gets a free pass in the extreme fame game. No one comes out the other side well-adjusted and happy and mentally well, name me one.
Mm.
So, but that came along after. But Barbara Streisand, to begin with, is saying, I haven't had much fun in my life. And I thought, it's like, who has? It's like, really run with the, what is fun? How much fun is there? Have you had any fun?
What does she mean by fun? I think she just means, I was really struck when she says, there was a quote from her that says something like, even after all these years, I'm still so hurt by the criticism and I don't believe any of the praise. And, like, whoa, that's really hard.
Well, they told her...
She's 81, and the people were so mean about the way that she looked. They were so mean about her nose, and they were so mean about all of this stuff. And at 81, she still thinks, God, they were so mean to me. And even after, you know, just TVs and musicals and films and enormous success, she still can't believe the praise.
But isn't the nature of her... iconism and her huge appeal, and it's like a huge appeal to gay men and stuff. It's like she's still alive, you know. She has the Liza Minnelli tragic centre, which makes
right,
her so
but
identifiable.
She's still here, yeah.
But she's still there. No, listen. So look, we could go on with her big wang. We've done it before. You know, mental health issues and fame. Robbie Williams and fame. Yes, my feeling. Of course, they're all mad. It's partly to do with what you have to do to become that famous. So Tim Cook's very famous. He won't have mental health issues because he's got there by being a nerd. To get sort of uber fame, really, mostly music. You know, pop star, acting. Presenting TV, you have to be, as you said of me, in a very small way, you have to be a psychopath. You know, when I was doing telly, to blot out everything else, go, la, 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 give everything that you have. And I'm just presenting incredibly dull BBC sort of entertainment reality shows. But to give a pop music performance, to hold a big live event together, you've got to have, you've got to be absolutely fucking mental. Whether you're Jonathan Ross or Jerry Springer or Lady Gaga, whoever that might be, or Leonardo DiCaprio, to do that you've got to be mental. And then the fame that you get, what you get for that, that personality type makes you uniquely unsuited for what fame is, which is fickle. And fame gets you up and then it plummets. And then Robbie Williams is in, take that, and then he's out and it's all terrible. And there's nothing to do but smack and fags and booze. And then you do Millennium or whatever. You do your solo career.
Well, he teams up with Guy Chambers.
Whatever he does.
Yeah.
He goes up and he becomes famous and then he's okay. And, blah, 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 and you try and hold it all together and then it gets taken away from you. It just does. And you crash again. And that's a sort of a thing with fame. With Barbara Streisand, it's just, I thought I would take it as a jumping off point to be having fun. I've not had much fun. Have you? How much fun should you have?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had much fun in your life?
Me?
Yeah.
I think I have. But what I think of as fun, there are some people in the world who can guarantee fun. They go, right, I need these people in this situation with these sort of, you know, accessories, and we will have fun. I'm not really able to do that. I'm not really able to manufacture fun. But I am open to fun. And when there is a situation that is fun, I try to be in the moment and have fun. But I'm not, I'm not one of those people who's like, we will go to this pop concert and we will have fun. So, or, you know,
but, no, but this is the, and there's the quandary. This is interesting. This is interesting because we both know, don't we, that we wouldn't have fun at a pop concert. So at any pop concert, and I see these, and I have, we have friends like Katie, Katie and Oz go to things, and you know, Emma Tucker, the editor of the Wall Street Journal, my mate who was editor of the Times, and editor of the Sunday Times, of course. She's in New York, and she posts, and she's endlessly going to these amazing concerts, and her sons go and hang with her, and you go, I go, oh, what fun. Oh, no, I'd be so lonely and miserable.
I wouldn't be lonely and miserable, I'd be stressed.
Glastonbury comes around every year, God. And these people in there, no, it's, what is it that Barbara Streisand has there? Because fun, really, I'm going to say, after supper, children on their iPads, no column to do in the morning, things a bit chilled, log burner going in the bedroom, sitting in that nice long comfy chair, reading a book with a cup of tea. No, that is fun. And someone phones up and says, as it was with Harry and Meghan are in trouble for a private jet for a one-night gig, Katy Perry in Las Vegas. I go, no, sorry, I've just finished chapter 3. I'm going to make some more tea and read chapter 4. There's nothing about getting on a private jet with a load of other fuckheads and flying to Vegas to watch Katy Perry. No, I can see technically I should have done it because it would make Richard Bacon jealous. Because he has an enormous amount of fun, my friend Richard Bacon, who's in Hollywood having an amazing time, and he's got all those kind of problems with, you know, ADHD and entertainment and got to have fun all the time, and if I haven't got fun, oh my God, am I doing it? You know, all those things. Richard Bacon is perceived by everyone who knows him to have more fun than anybody else. But how much fun is it if you're different?
What is fun? I mean, that would be very popular.
What is fun? Would it get me on the front page? Or do I have to pretend?
Maybe. I mean, who was it that said that work is more fun than fun? I think it was Noel Coward. You don't want to slump into sort of cliches like that. I mean, that's my job.
No. And you did it well. I have to say,
doing a fun piece of work is more fun than anything else.
When I sit down and write a column, and I'm not sure how it's going, and about third paragraph, I tell a joke which is like true and funny. I get up and I clap and I go, yes. Pathetic, isn't it?
And then you're having fun.
And I pace around and I look forward to sitting down at my... It's like this podcast is about trying to come up with an idea for a column. And if I can come up with a good enough idea that I can actually do it for the column, I'd probably go and have lunch and have a really great afternoon. A friend of mine had a 60th birthday party recently and it was in Oxford and I couldn't get a babysitter and my wife couldn't have come with me. All week people have been posting pictures of this party and it looks great. I think I wouldn't have had fun.
So maybe alternative fun. What I think is fun. Yeah. Now here's fun. Now this is what's really fun.
Here's fun.
Hey, wait. Think. Go, dear Barbara. Think you've never had fun? I bet you have. I bet you have had fun, but other people told you it wasn't fun.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Something like everyone tells you, for example.
First of all, get out of the way. Oh, Barbara, do you mean fun like going to parties where no one knows who you are and just dancing till dawn? Because that's not fun.
No. Or do you mean fun as having just a really good clear out of your knicker drawer and just buying some nice fresh pants?
I won't say knicker drawer because I shouldn't lecture an 80-year-old woman about her knickers.
Sorry, but obviously I can only write about it from my point of view and I would obviously be entitled to talk to her about her knicker drawer. You know.
Yeah.
but it would be funnier if you said, do you mean fun like going to parties? Wait, don't interrupt me. No, but you mustn't, because it makes you sad when you listen back to it and you've just got blah, 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 blah. It would be funnier if you were addressing Barbara Streisand and you said, do you mean fun like going to parties, Barbara, or do you mean fun like bleeding the radiator or like defrosting the fridge?
Barbara, have you never gone outside and pissed on the roses in winter?
There we go, exactly.
And then just to give them those nitrates?
Yeah. So what's funny there is the clash between super glamour, gay icon Barbara Streisand and turning the compost. So that's where, and that's very you kind of joke and you humour. I like that one. I think that's good.
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
To find out what I wrote about in the end, pick up a copy of the paper or treat yourselves to a digital subscription.
Even on a budget,
Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.